My name is Rudy Kelly, and I am an Aboriginal.
I am Chief.
My dad was a great chief of the Tsimshian Nation, beloved by his people. But at home, with his family, he brought anger and pain. He told me that to succeed, I would have to leave everything behind. Now I'm on a journey to find out who and what my dad really was. The Aboriginal is an all-new CBC podcast. Available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
That's the sound of an excavator digging through the rubble of a bombed-out building in Rafah in Gaza. In the neighboring city of Khan Yunis, there are more of these machines at work. Efforts are being made there to exhume a mass grave where hundreds of bodies were discovered. And there are growing concerns of an imminent ground invasion by Israeli forces into Rafah. Suz van Meegen is the head of operations for the Norwegian Refugee Council. We reached her in Rafah yesterday, where you can hear the constant buzz of drones overhead.
The roads are really congested. The roads will be full of the remaining cars and trucks and donkey carts and horses and people trying to move every one of their last possessions to somewhere of safety, which I think is fair to expect means we'll see roads completely blocked off. So everyone is completely confused. Which direction do they go to? What do they take? How do they get there? Speaking from a humanitarian organization, it leaves us in a situation that we feel extremely uncomfortable with when it comes to contingency planning. We don't know where people will go, and in any case, we don't have enough supplies in Gaza at the moment to be able to meet needs.
Ravina Shamdasani is the chief spokesperson for the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva. That's where we've reached her. Ravina, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. And I want to start with the grim topic of these mass graves that have been found around two hospitals in Gaza. Let's establish, I think this is critical for our listeners, let's establish what we know and what we don't know. So what do we know about who these people were and how they ended up in these mass graves?
Absolutely. What we know is that these two hospitals were attacked by Israeli forces. What we know is that these were hospitals that were providing medical care, and they were also providing shelter to a large number of internally displaced people. What we also know is that a lot of people were killed. The Israeli Defense Forces have acknowledged that at least 200 people were killed at Al-Shifa and also at Al-Nasser Hospital. So there's no doubt about any of these facts. What we also know is that a large number of people were buried in mass graves. What we don't know is the circumstances in which these people were killed. Were they killed as a result of the conduct of hostilities, or were they killed in other circumstances? We have some reports that are very worrying, that people in the graves were found to have their hands tied. That is extremely worrying because that would be indicative of a war crime. We have not managed to verify these reports, but we are insisting that there needs to be an investigation given the gravity of the reports and based on the facts that we know, which are already very worrying.
So what evidence has the UN actually seen, especially about these very worrying claims about bodies with their hands tied that may have been executed?
Mm. So again, it's clear that there are bodies in mass graves. It's clear that the bodies were dug up. What's not clear, again, is the circumstances in which they were buried. We have received a large number of reports, also photographs. Again, I don't want to speak about those in too much detail because we haven't managed to verify those. And the reason for that is that there is a lack of access. We have not been granted access into Gaza, and neither have international journalists and neither have many other investigators who could potentially carry out a proper investigation and establish the facts. And this needs to happen.
Well, the UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk said in a statement that these discoveries were, quote, renewed concerns about possible war crimes. And he's called for an independent, effective and transparent investigations into the deaths, as you were saying to us. But how does that happen under these circumstances? Who leads it? And how can it happen during a time of conflict?
No, to be clear, in the best of circumstances, that has not happened. Even before October 7th, there was a climate of impunity. Whenever we would put allegations of serious violations to the Israeli authorities, there was a real lack of action in terms of actually carrying out transparent, independent investigations and even prosecutions or other forms of accountability. So there is a prevailing climate of impunity even prior to October 7th. Currently, there are various international organizations engaged in the situation to establish facts and evidence and accountability. There is the International Criminal Court, which is engaged, and there is also the UN Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. What is crucial is that these actors are granted access to be able to look at exactly what went on, collect and preserve evidence in a way that it can then be used to establish the facts and towards accountability.
Would there need to be a ceasefire for that to happen?
There needs to be a ceasefire for so many reasons. There needs to be a ceasefire so that there are not further violations committed. But yes, it would be very important to have a ceasefire to be able to carry out this work properly. The collection and preservation of evidence really needs to be done very quickly, because otherwise you lose, bodies decompose, and you lose a lot of what you would otherwise be able to establish.
And there have been allegations that IDF forces have in some ways desecrated some of the bodies that are in these mass graves. The IDF said these claims are baseless. These bodies were respectfully examined by their forces, who were conducting DNA tests looking for hostages. And they've said the bodies were returned as they were found. So how does the UN respond to these statements by the IDF?
Well, we can't really speak to allegations of the desecration of bodies. We simply don't know what happened. We have seen the Israeli statements, but it is crucial, and international law requires that bodies, even after you die, there are still rights attached to how the body should be treated, and desecration of the corpses of people who have been killed in conflict is a violation of international humanitarian law. So you do need to be very careful. What is clear is that a large number of these bodies are unidentified. Now think again at the families, about the families of these people. They are still looking for their loved ones with no idea whether these loved ones are alive or dead. And when they do finally find the corpses, horrific as that moment is, many of them are pressing to understand exactly what happened to them in their last moments and the need for justice.
Okay, I want to shift here to the question of a possible ground invasion of Rafah, and what the UN Human Rights Office is watching for ahead of this possible offensive. What are you preparing for?
We are calling, with the loudest of voices and ringing the loudest of alarm bells to say that this cannot happen. It should not happen. You already have 1.2 million people who have been displaced multiple times and who are sheltering in Rafah. There are talks of creating a safe zone, creating some kind of corridors, but this is simply not possible. Gaza was already the most densely populated place, one of the most densely populated places on the planet. And now you've got the population that has been moved, forced to move into an even smaller area. To then talk about creating safe zones within this area, it is simply impossible. So we are urging all states with influence to use that influence to ensure that there is no further larger offensive on Rafah.
There are reportedly 133 hostages remaining in Gaza, including 36 who are confirmed dead. And yesterday, the leaders of 18 countries, including the U.S. and us in Canada, called on Hamas to free the hostages. What kind of pressure needs to be applied to see Israeli hostages released?
No, absolutely. The hostages need to be freed, and they need to be freed unconditionally. The holding of civilian hostages is a war crime. That is clear. And it is crucial that they are freed. We've received worrying reports of course, the manner in which these hostages were taken on October 7th, but also the treatment of the hostages. And of course, let's not forget that these hostages themselves are caught up in the conduct of hostilities, in the airstrikes that are being carried out, in all the destruction that's being carried out. It must be absolutely terrifying. We have met with families of hostages. We've met with released hostages as well. And it's just mind-blowing. I mean, imagining what people are going through in those situations and what their families are going through. Well, of course, at the same time, you've got, you know, more than 33,000 people who have been killed in Gaza as well. You've got large numbers of people who have been arbitrarily detained, and they need to be released too.
And I want you to listen to the parents of one of those hostages, Hirsch Goldberg Holin, they're his parents. Mm. They spoke this week after Hamas released a video of their son who's been held hostage since October 7th. And in the video, he looks ill, he's missing a hand. And this is how Hirsch's parents responded to the video.
We're here today with a plea to all of the leaders of the parties who have been negotiating to date. That includes Qatar, Egypt, the United States, Hamas, and Israel. Be brave, lean in, seize this moment, and get a deal done to reunite all of us with our loved ones and to end the suffering in this region.
And 6 months on, there's no ceasefire, regardless of the UN passing resolutions on the matter. Is the UN in a position, an effective position, to broker a dialogue and to lead to a lasting ceasefire here?
Listen, the various bits of the UN have been trying through public and private means to insist on a ceasefire, to insist on unconditional release of all the hostages. We've been trying this for 6 months now. Unfortunately, for the longest time, the international community of member states of the UN were not speaking with one voice. Now, that changed when the Security Council adopted a resolution calling for a ceasefire as well. The International Court of Justice also issued interim orders urging Israel to stop any actions that could be tantamount to genocide. In spite of all of this pressure, the conflict continues, but we have no choice but to continue. The UN is operating on many levels. We are continuing to try to provide as much aid as possible, even in the face of illegal restrictions against the delivery of that aid. We are also trying in the fog of war to document the facts on the ground. And this is why we felt compelled to speak out about these mass graves. There are so many violations conducted on a daily basis in the OPT, in Gaza. It's almost become, par for the course. It's yet another blip on the radar and then you move on. Well, we shouldn't. Mass graves are very serious, potentially very serious violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law. And we need to continue to keep this on the agenda in order to press for justice. And only then will we be able to apply the kind of pressure that you need to apply to bring this conflict to an end and to ensure justice and accountability for people whose rights have been violated.
Ravina, thanks for your time this morning and thanks for joining us. We appreciate this.
Thank you for covering the story. It's very important. Thank you.
Ravina Shamdasani is the chief spokesperson of the UN Human Rights Office. She's in Geneva.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.